Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning, you're listening to Beat. This is The Sunday Grill, and my first guest this morning was the voiceover artist for an ad campaign made in January 2024 that went viral 18 months later. It was used by more than 1 million videos on TikTok alone. The Jet 2 Holidays ad has been the sound of the summer and beyond. The woman behind the voice of the ad is Zoe Lister, and she was in Wexford Town during the week at Social Media Fest, where I got to catch up with her.
Hello. You might have heard me probably sometime over the summer if you've been on social media, which most people have, as the voice of the Jet 2 holiday adverts. It's been mad.
Are you allowed to say it still?
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Of always.
Tell me, this is just mad, seeing this so much. How did this happen? Do you even know yourself?
I have no idea. It's just one of the most bizarre things to ever happen to me in my life, obviously, and for anyone, for it to happen to anyone. But it's been really, really unexpected but brilliant. I've got a lot from it, and it's come at a really good time, and I feel really, very fortunate.
So, like, when did you start to get the first inklings that people were using your voice to show mayhem?
Well, actually, over a year ago, wow, I was starting to get the first videos, like funny travel fail videos cut with my voice and the Jess Glynn track. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. People are starting to kind of respond to it in a different way. And I remember there was a couple of young women last year went as a Halloween costume as a Jet 2 air stewardess and Jess Glynn. They dressed up as them and they did the whole like lip sync. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But that was like a year ago. And then just gradually over this year, and then at the beginning of the summer, it just absolutely exploded and went worldwide, which is really surprising because Jet 2 Holidays, it's just a European airline.
I saw the daughter of a Real Housewives of Beverly Hills do it for her wedding.
I know. So there's been so many examples, and it's been really, really weird and wild to see. Like Jeff Goldblum did a lip sync, and Mariah Carey got on to her private jet with the Jet 2 sound, slightly not reading the room. it's been really, really. Who's the Pussycat Doll as well?
Oh, Nicole Scherzinger.
Yeah, she did a whole routine. Whoa. Yeah, it's been made into dance tracks and
been in the clubs.
Was this just a random job for you, the Jet 2 job?
Yeah, it's always been. I've been lucky enough to do the Jet 2 Holidays adverts for 7 years. So it's been a contract that I'm really perpetually anxious about it rolling around again. I'm always like, they're going to rebrand and
they can't know.
Well, at the start of it all, though, I didn't know what Jet 2 were thinking of it all. And I was thinking I don't know. I was sure they were going to rebrand and that was it. That was me done. But yeah, now it's sort of, I feel like I'm part of the furniture.
Totally. And tell us about yourself. So you do voiceovers, you're an actress.
Yeah. And funnily enough, I haven't really done any acting since I've had children, 8 years ago. But offers have started to come in as a result of this. Like, I've been offered to do a play next year, a really good play in the UK, which I'm still thinking about, how do I make that work with children? And I do hosting events and presenting stuff as well. But it's just opened so many doors. It's been really brilliant. And I was a TV writer for 10 years. I forgot about that. but I sort of parked that because the TV industry is in sort of perpetual decline. So I'm sort of I think that's sort of over now. So at the start of this year, I was really feeling despairing. What am I doing? Yeah. And now it's opened up.
Isn't it mad to see that with social media? And then what about your own social media? Has it really bumped up your own following?
Just a bit, yeah. So I went and did the breakfast show Capital Radio in the UK. And it was for a bit called Follow Me. And I was like, this is a bit embarrassing. I've got about less than 2,000 followers on Instagram. But since then, I've got over 100,000. But that generates more work and more opportunities. And that's what we all seem to need to have a big platform now. And I've just been very lucky I feel like I've been gifted one.
So you're here at Social Media Fest today. What will you be talking about today?
Well, I'll be talking about the pros and the cons of going viral, as well as sort of harnessing main character energy in your life, because I realise that's what I really try to do this year. And I feel like I've kind of lived enough life before this happened to know exactly what I wanted to get out of this moment. And just relating it back to some experiences, like work experience from the past. Yeah, and hopefully just have a nice time meeting people as well today. I'm really looking forward to it.
It is mad, isn't it? Because you could have just ignored it and thought, that's my voice. It was really a moment in time that you had to grab a hold of.
I just thought, come on, let's go. This is it.
Well done. Have you any favourite Jet 2 memes or moments or videos that people have made?
Oh my gosh, there have been so, so many. And some of them I really feel like I shouldn't laugh at. Like there's a real particular funny one of mine, which is somebody drops their suitcase down an escalator. And I think it's caught on CCTV. And you can see the woman near the bottom of the escalator just hear the noise of it coming towards her like a horror film. And she looks and it's coming to get her. And she starts to run down the escalator. But sure enough, right at the last minute, it just takes her out.
Is that the one where there's also someone else crying, laughing in the corner? I think that's that one as well. And it takes a while to notice that someone is in bits laughing.
I've seen that one. I think that's when someone takes an epic fall down, like some subway stairs or something. And I think it was just like a comedy fall. Like it was like a mad fall and there's just someone who's just on the floor. It's brilliant. There have been some really funny ones.
Have you tried to incorporate some of your own mishaps into your own voice and put it on?
Oh, nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. No, I don't. It's just been mad. Everything's been Jet 2 holidays.
That might be a step too far.
Exactly.
It's just such a moment. And I'm sure there's lots of people who experience this, that something they've done has gone a bit viral. But do you ever think about what it was? Is it the, like, you're so exuberant in the voiceover and very determined that nothing does beat a Jet 2 holiday? What do you think it is that grabbed a hold of people?
Well, do you know what? I actually did ask ChatGPT this question and it came up with the answer that the absurdly camp delivery, I was like, yes, that's me. And it's sort of like a throwback, a 90s throwback. It's nostalgic sounding kind of advert. I was like, these are all, this is just describing me basically. And it was kind of quite a moment because I sort of like uncovered who I really am and just sort of like embraced that and thought, well, yeah, that's it.
What a moment. What a story. And like I said, I'm sure there's lots of people who've had that sort of story on the internet, but you're really grabbing the bull by the horns and it's great to see that as well. What a pivot.
I'm really enjoying myself. I've had a really, really fun year. I still can't believe it's all happened. But,
brilliant. Yeah. Well, thanks a million for talking to me. How do people find you on Instagram or on social media?
Oh, you can find me on Instagram at Zlister, that is my actual name, and on TikTok at Zlister1. I'm on LinkedIn, Zoe Lister. You can find me.
And do people go looking for you to talk to you as the Jet 2 holiday girl?
Sometimes people do recognize me a little bit here and there. Sometimes if you're on a line a lot, you might know who I was if I walked in somewhere, but not generally. It's quite good being famous for voiceover, actually.
Yes, exactly. You're not going to be papped, so that's good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for talking to us on Beat this morning. The best of luck with everything.
Thank you, Orla.
And that was Zoe Lister, a.k.a. the Jet 2 holiday ad voiceover artist. Zoe was speaking at the Social Media Fest in Wexford during the week. They have upcoming dates in other parts of the country. You can check them out on their social medias, of course, by searching for Social Media Fest.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Across the southeast, you are listening to Beat, and since it's November 30th, I think we're okay to talk Christmas things. And when it comes to Christmas things, I think one of my favourite bits is the food. But if you're the person who's preparing the food this Christmas time, it can be quite stressful. But fear not, we have a southeast chef joining us this morning to give us some tips on this exactly 25 days to Christmas. He is Tom Phelan. He's the pastry chef at Mount Juliet and he has that advice for us. You're very welcome, Tom.
Thank you for having me, Orla.
And I must say, before we start on the prep, you have created a masterpiece in pastry at Mount Juliet. Tell us a little bit about it. You can see it on your Instagram, which is tom.phelan, or on Mount Juliet's Instagram as well. Tell us about this phenomenal gingerbread house that you've made.
So I suppose I'm working in Mount Juliet about 8 years now, and I'm the head pastry chef with 5 years. And we always had some sort of a gingerbread house. But I traveled to Canada for a while and I worked in a hotel and they had a replica of the hotel as their gingerbread house. So I was like, Jesus, I need to bring this to Mount Juliet. Mm-hmm. So when I came back and took over as head pastry in Mount Juliet then, I started to work on this, and we're now in the fifth year of having the Gingerbread Manor House.
It's amazing.
I suppose it is amazing. Like, and people love it, and people love to touch it, and they ask me if it's real, and I suppose all of it is true. Like, it really is real. It takes a lot of time to make.
So when did you start making this?
So we actually started just before Halloween making the gingerbread house.
Okay.
So, it takes about 100 hours of time to do. The roof is made of shreddies, and that itself takes about 12 hours to put together.
Amazing. So, and there's three roofs. There's not just one roof.
Yeah. So you have the two wings of the manor house, and you have the main roof of the manor house as well. So it really is the whole manor house. And in jelly tots, gingerbread.
Oh, it's amazing.
Love hearts.
In this situation, does the taste matter? Like, will anyone get to eat this?
No, so no one gets to eat it. It is out for quite a while, and a lot of people do touch it. But okay. I suppose what people are looking for is the smell. So there is extra ginger in it and a little bit of cinnamon for good luck.
Gorgeous. God, I'd never even think of that. That's such a good idea. And if people come into Mount Juliet, where is it?
So it's actually in the manor house in the main lobby area. Once you go inside the door, you can't miss it. It's there amongst the Christmas display in the main lobby there. So
it's just absolutely gorgeous. Have a look at it. It is, as I said, on Tom's Instagram, tom.phelan, or on the Mount Juliet Estate Instagram as well. What a feat. I once made a gingerbread house. You know the ones that you get? They've done everything for
the
you.
The little assembled ones.
Yeah, well, if only I could find you the photo. It was an absolute disaster. So even for your construction, I say fair play. It's quite a tough thing to do.
It is. Rye Lyson has many tricks. Sets like cement.
Well, let's talk about some of your other tricks when it comes to Christmas food prep. And now really is the time to be thinking about what you can do in order to make life a bit easier as we head up to the big day itself on December 25th, isn't it?
Absolutely. Planning is essential for Christmas dinner.
Okay.
If you're not planned and not ready, you're going to have way too much ingredients. You're going to have a lot of extra waste, and you probably are going to be missing a lot of ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So like now you need to kind of start, I suppose you need to have your turkey ordered if you're ordering your turkey, your ham ordered.
Mm-hmm.
We would have six for Christmas dinner, and then we would have about 30 for St. Stephen's Day.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's so we would order about a 15-pound turkey. It's a free-range turkey that we would get, and it's a hen turkey.
Lovely.
So that way then you're going to have, I suppose, the majority of white meat, less brown meat,
yeah,
which
gorgeous.
Isn't a fan.
Yeah, that's what you want. So around now, are there veg that you can do or anything like that?
Not so much veg, but again, you could be looking towards your dessert prep. So I suppose is where you would be going would be if you're making your Christmas cake and your Christmas pudding, they should all be underway now.
Okay.
And you should be waiting for your Christmas cakes to mature so you can ice them or almond ice them as the next step would be.
Right. You should be doing that around now then, shouldn't you? I remember making Christmas cakes
absolutely.
In October. Okay, yeah.
Yes, I have my Christmas cakes made. I should be icing them in about probably next weekend, I would say. I would ice them.
Okay.
And
the dinner then itself, is there anything that we can do right now for the dinner?
So for the dinner now, you would, again, you're going to be more than likely organizing your ingredients, making sure you know exactly what you're doing, planning your starter.
Mm-hmm.
It's always kind of one of those little forgotten ones. And I suppose just organizing that you have all the ingredients there.
Mm-hmm. So
it's
tell
really
us what
important.
You're having as your starter on your Christmas day.
Oh, okay. So our Christmas dinner, again, normally goes on for a good few hours, as a lot of people's does. But uh-huh. we would start with crab always,
lovely,
a little bit of dressed crab, because I find it quite light. You don't want a heavy starter. I think like some families would have the chicken and mushroom vol-au-vent or something like that.
Oh,
but
that's
I find
a good
that's
one
very
as well,
heavy.
Though. It is very heavy. But
very heavy
one.
Before you have your mm-hmm. before mm-hmm. you have more turkey after.
Yeah, true. And are you doing all the cooking in your house on Christmas Day?
So believe it or not, I would do the majority of the savory cooking and my mother would always look after desserts.
Very good.
So
okay.
it's always a little bit of a reversal. rehearsal on
the role that
Christmas
have.
Day.
And yeah. when it's on the real run up to it, like you've really thought about, or your mum has thought about the Christmas cakes and all that. But when does your job start for Christmas Day and all the savoury stuff in your house?
So my savoury stuff would be, again, I would probably be that week out from Christmas. I would be getting my stuff together, making my cranberry sauce and having...
Fair play to you. I never even thought of that.
It's a very easy thing to make.
Okay.
I would also be doing, I wouldn't probably prep a lot of my stuff until your kind of Christmas Eve or the day before Christmas Eve, but anything that kind of holds well, you would keep there and have.
Okay.
So again, peeling your potatoes. No one wants to get up Christmas morning and peel potatoes. So peel them Christmas Eve and they're fine.
Okay. Could I freeze any vegetables right now? Could I do anything like that? Like chop them up, stick them in the freezer, or would they be a bit soggy on the day?
If you were, I would probably blanch off the vegetables first. Okay. So just put them into some water and simmer them for a couple of minutes just to kind of power cook them. Mm. And then freeze them from that stage and then take them out and re-cook them.
And they could be a roast veg even then, could they?
They could be roast, yeah. They could be roast.
Yeah. And anything with the stuffing or anything that I could freeze? I'm just big on the freezer
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
you could definitely make the stuffing and have that in the freezer ready to go.
Okay, so that's another job done.
Yes, yes. You could potentially make some sort of a gravy and have it in it, or sauce and have it in the freezer as well, ready to go if you were making a nice nice base of a sauce.
Am I breaking your heart here saying I'm going to stick stuff in the freezer? You sound like you're a man who likes to get it all done a few days before and have everything fresh.
Yes. It kind of is the way I work, but there is nothing. Just be kind of realistic about what you're freezing. I suppose don't put broccoli in the freezer.
Okay.
You're going to have broccoli soup then when it comes out.
Yes, unless you are having broccoli soup, which I wouldn't recommend on Christmas Day.
No, I don't think so.
And then, Tom, have you got my favourite part of the dinner, a roast potato trick? Because I saw someone on Instagram. Oh, go on, tell us. I saw someone on Instagram putting rice flour on their roasties. To make to crisp
them up.
No, too much.
I don't have rice. Well, I don't have rice flour, but I do have duck fat.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So to cook them, so again, parboil them till they're nice and fluffy on the outside, but still kind of firm.
Yeah.
It's my favorite part of the Christmas dinner, actually, as well. So it's.
I love it.
And then toss them in some duck fat and be generous with it. Like, it's Christmas dinner. We don't care about the calories. We can worry about that in January. Mm-hmm. Toss them in the duck fat and then bake them in the duck fat instead of your oil.
Where would I get
a little tiny bit of? I would say some of the supermarkets, I would imagine, maybe Arkeen Stores would have it.
Good stuff in Waterford. Yeah, so some of the kind of artisan type stores would have it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Great stuff.
Perhaps some of the butchers could have it maybe as well.
Okay, and what does that do? What does the duck fat do? Is there a taste to it?
It's just pure fat. So it really, really, when they're roasting, they're adding that flavour, but they're also kind of caramelising, and it just gives it a crisp like no other, I suppose.
Oh, yum. Now hold on to your hat. Do you know what I put on my roast potatoes after I've parboiled them? You ready for this?
I'm ready.
This might be a chef's dread. Aromat.
Oh, God.
I love a bit of aromat.
We aromat comes up in our kitchen quite regularly, actually, as a topic of conversation.
It's perfection.
We have to explain normally to our international chefs what it is.
How would you even explain what aromat is?
Oh, I said it's a seasoning of an umami flavour.
Yes,
so
it is. It's a very Irish thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely unique to Ireland.
Totally. So I would say
put
no
mustard
to
powder on.
Okay, mustard powder, no aromat. On your roast potatoes.
Yeah, a little tiny bit.
Okay.
It's just again going to add that little bit of a flavour. And no, you're not covering them. Like a little sprinkle.
Okay, no, that would be horrific. I'd cover it in aromat, though, to tell you the truth. Well, listen, some great advice there. And fair play to you on your gingerbread house in Mount Juliet. It is just so beautiful to look at. And it sounds like it smells even better. And some brilliant tips there. You're okay with me freezing stuff this weekend, yes?
Yes, but keep it to a minimum.
Keep it to a minimum. I will. Well, hopefully, Tom, we might talk to you maybe the week before Christmas to see how you're getting on and see if you have any other tips for us as we head into that really stressful time for the chefs in the house.
Absolutely. That's a really good plan.
Brilliant stuff. That is Tom Phelan, and he is the pastry chef at Mount Juliet. And that's why he's done that phenomenal gingerbread house in Mount Juliet. But he is the savoury chef in his house on Christmas Day. So we'll talk to you again. Thanks a million, Tom.
Thank you. Bye.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill here on Beat, and my next guest is part of the circular economy in County Wexford. She's a passion for upcycling. Her name is Bonnie Futomoko, aka Be Graceful Upcycles on Instagram. And along with her friend Lynn Houghton from the Upcycle Movement, they created a swap shop in Enniscorthy recently. And they've more planned, but Bonnie also has some great upcycling ideas on her Instagram page, Be Graceful Upcycles. So we're going to talk to her about lots of different things. You're very welcome to the Sunday Grill this morning, Bonnie.
Hi.
It's lovely to talk to you. Can we just talk what's happened in the last few days before we talk upcycling and sustainability? Because you're originally from Hawaii, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm originally from Hawaii. And living in Ireland,
living in Enniscorthy. So a very different, I would say, is it, to Hawaii?
Same but different, you know, island cultures, you know, family, friends. Yeah, it's similar.
Okay, it's community, knowing everybody.
Exactly. Okay. Knowing everybody, yeah. Sometimes a little bit of who needs friends when you have family, because family's so large and everywhere. Uh-huh. You know, it's all good though. I love it.
Good stuff. So you celebrated Thanksgiving just days ago, and did you celebrate in Enniscorthy?
Of course I did. It's my most favorite holiday of the year, even more so than Christmas. Definitely.
I'm always so intrigued by Christmas versus Thanksgiving in the States, because I think more is put into Thanksgiving, isn't it?
I think so. And, you know, for me as well, Thanksgiving's non-denominational, you know, and on top of it, there's no gift giving. You know, it's just coming together, cook a good meal, gather around the table and eat and chat and just have a really sweet evening.
Lovely. And so tell me, what did you cook for Thanksgiving? And who did you have over?
I've had three American friends who flew over. I had also two friends from UK who flew over as well.
Wow.
One of my best Irish friends, my lovely husband, and that's as many people as I could fit around my table.
On a Thursday.
On a Thursday, I got it's funny here, you know how you folks do fresh turkeys for mm-hmm. Christmas?
Yeah.
In the States, I mean, especially in Hawaii, I don't know about, you know, the continent or anything, but it's pretty much you get a frozen turkey.
Okay.
You know, there's too many of us to uh-huh. queue up at the butcher's.
Oh,
and
so
order
that's why a lot of people do the, you know, where they get a big vat of oil and they put the bird into that.
That I don't do.
Good,
I'm a safety person. I do it traditionally in the oven, you know, controlled environment. And in the States too, yeah, they have those things that pop up. I don't know if you've ever seen it when
What's
you were
that?
In the States. There's mm-hmm. You buy a frozen turkey and it's it has this plastic thing in it and it'll pop up automatically when the turkey's cooked.
Oh, wow.
So you don't risk. Yeah, so you don't risk undercooking it or overcooking it.
So you didn't have that in Ireland?
No, don't have that. But at least I can get a frozen turkey, so I'm happy days, you know.
Good stuff.
Because my first Thanksgiving here, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't get a turkey, because I thought I would have to get a fresh turkey. I'd have to wait till Christmas, and that's no good to me, right?
Okay.
So there are fresh turkeys. No, frozen turkeys.
Uh-huh. And then pumpkin pie, did you do that?
Yep, I've done the pumpkin pie. My friend made pumpkin bread to start us off on the day. So, because you want to wake up on Thanksgiving Day already, you know, I don't want to say the word indulging, but yeah, feasting on, you know, on Thanksgiving food. So she made the pumpkin bread the previous night, so we could already have it in the morning. Yeah, and it's just traditional stuff. Stuffing. I keep it super simple. Stuffing, mashed potatoes, some kind of a vegetable. This year it was a coleslaw.
Lovely.
Because it was cold. My American friend actually made the cranberry sauce in the States. She made it in the States and she brought it over because, as she says, cranberry sauce from a tin or a jar is not the same.
Doesn't cut it.
No, it doesn't cut it. So she brought it over and yeah, happy days.
Wow. And tell me, do you do turkey and ham in the States or is that more an Irish thing?
I think that's an Irish thing, yeah. Especially for your Christmas.
Yes.
Do you do that?
Now you just have me starving for my Christmas dinner, of which I've already had many, obviously. So.
Well, funny enough, the night before, my husband made bacon and cabbage.
You're hitting both your cultures now. Yeah. Well, I hope you had a very happy Thanksgiving. Will we talk a little bit about your passion for upcycling and sustainability? This is really, if you love Vinted, you should love a swap shop, shouldn't you? There's a real joy in going and seeing new clothes, isn't there?
I think so. And also coming in and like chatting with people. It's been fun also styling people, you know, because I know I know what's hanging on the racks. I know what things have come in. And so, and you kind of look at somebody or a friend or somebody will walk in and you're like, hey, I saw this. And you kind of rummage through the rail or something. And you're like, hey, what do you think about this? And I'm not like that. I don't consider myself a very stylish person, dresser per se, but I have enjoyed styling people, if that makes sense.
And this all came about because you watched a documentary on RTE, is it?
Yes. I don't know how, I'm sure people are familiar with that forced fashion RTE investigation that was on.
Yeah.
And that was heavy, wasn't it?
Uh-huh, it was. And
it was super heavy. And just coincidentally, the next day, Lynn and I had planned to meet for coffee. I mean, it was a big coincidence. And the next morning we were, you know, sitting down, chatting, you know, catching up. And it was like, so last night. And it was like, yeah. And you don't even know where to start. You know, you're just kind of like, where do you even start? And, you know, again, chatting about it. Hey, Bon, you know, we should do something. Yes, Lynn, we need to do something. Hey, Bon, let's do a swap. I'm like, yeah, we know how to swap. And so we did. So there you go.
And it worked out well, so much so that you're planning more in Enniscorthy, aren't you? Just no dates as yet.
No dates, but definitely with, you know, support from, you know, community development groups, especially like Sustainable Enniscorthy, Wexford County Council. I think the big dream is to have an actual community clothes hub of some sort.
Great. Because you swapped 350 items on the day, didn't you?
Yeah, it was all about letting things walk out the door. Totally. Yeah.
Okay. And when you say swap, I never really get that in a swap shop. Do you have to bring in your own stuff then? Or
so the way we organized it, and, you know, different swap shops do it different ways. For us, it was you can bring 0 to 5 items into the shop. You know, let it be pre-loved, let it be clean, let it be wearable.
Okay.
And you walked in, and you know, we do have to check the clothes. You know, if it's not wearable, then we cannot accept it.
Mm-hmm,
and so, and then likewise, you know, give you a token for the number of items that you've brought in.
Okay.
And you are then able to, you know, cruise, you know, check out the shop, take up to as many items, you know. Did you bring in 5 items? Didn't want to take 5? That's great. If not, did you only want to take 4? I mean, it doesn't matter. But, you know, that's what you got, 1 for 1.
Okay.
I think the big one for us, though, was that even if you walked in with 0, you know, because there are a lot of people who are tagging along, a lot of people who just wandering into the shop saying, oh, what's going on? You know, and if you walked into the shop, we gave you a token with 1 item. So if you came with 0, we give you 1 because please, you know, we want to raise awareness, you know.
And were you left with any clothes at the end of the day?
Yes, we were. Yeah, we do have, enough. And, you know, again, we are trying to build that clothes hub.
And is that where your upcycling comes in as well? Because if people look at your Instagram, Be Graceful Upcycles, you're a good sewer. You make some lovely things from clothes people don't want. Like, I would not be able to do what you do.
You totally are.
Really?
But thank you. Yeah. I always say, if you can sew a straight line, You know,
oh, I'm seriously. Very, very left-handed is the only problem.
Okay, well, and I'm also a hack. I'm also a sewing hack.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
I'm not formally trained, and so I just look at something and I'm like, okay, I think I could do that, you know, and just do it.
Like
just,
you know, you have some lovely stuff on your Instagram, like a gorgeous Thank yellow you. And white shirt, which became bags, scarves that became book cozies,
yeah.
Like a really good way to reuse clothes. How did you become so passionate about all this?
Gosh, there's going to be a long pause with that one because I've always been, you know, I love textiles.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I told you I'm not formally trained in by any means, mm-hmm. you know. But at the same time, I've also loved the memories. I think for me, the journey was more a personal one where I kept a lot of items that were sentimental for me and my, you know, me and my history. And mm-hmm. then I met my husband and it told a story. And the longer story is that I had like bags of stuff from my husband and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept holding on saying like, you know, one day I'm going to make a patchwork quilt of all our memories. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's quite popular in the States, patchwork quilts. And so, but you know, I didn't know how to sew or I didn't know how to do any of those things. And then one day in Ireland, I found a quilting course in Ardcavan of all places.
Okay.
And there was an American instructor who showed us how to properly quilt.
Wow.
You know, and I think it was good for me to have that formal training because, like I said, I'm also a hack. So it was nice to do the formal training mm-hmm. and then make the patchwork quilt of all these years of my husband and my, of you know, of our stories. You know,
yeah.
it was tea towels. It was favorite tea towels. It was his collared shirts
mm-hmm.
that even had like pen marks on it, or it was one of my favorite pieces in it is a tablecloth, and there's a burnt hole in it because there, you know, it's a candlelight ceremony.
Okay,
you know,
lovely.
Candlelight dinner.
Yeah,
and the candle, you know, and the candles melted, and then there was a fire, and then there you go. Favorite t-shirts, favorite jeans, and things, and that's the longer story, Orla. And then after that, I said, well, there's so many other things that can, you know, we can make other things from these shirts and
yeah, and really useful things and all as well. It's not just a case of, oh, I made this and it's going in the corner now too. Like stuff you'll actually use. If people want to check out your Instagram, it's Be Graceful, but the graceful instead of a C has a Y, upcycles there.
Yeah.
And that's where you'll put up all the details of the next swap shop as well. That'll be happening in Enniscorthy. I'm sure people will be interested in that. And of course, you shared the day with Lynn from the Upcycle Movement. So lots of like people doing great things when it comes to sustainability in County Wexford and beyond. Bonnie, thank you so much for talking to me. That was really interesting. And thanks for filling us in on all your Thanksgiving food. It's made me very hungry on this Sunday morning. So I'm off to have a rasher sandwich. Lovely to talk to you.
That sounds lovely. That sounds yummy. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Orla, for
Bonnie.
Your time.
Great
really
to talk to you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
The Sunday Grill here on Beat, and we have a date with a difference for your Christmas diary now as Lux Morales makes its Irish debut in Kilkenny. It's kind of one of those things that needs to be seen to be believed, but Reverend Stephen Farrell, the Dean of St. Canice's Church in Kilkenny City, is going to try his best to describe it to us, aren't you, Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, because that's just totally simple to describe this on radio.
Okay, well, you do Orla. This to yourself, Stephen. You had the moon last year, so you've gone bigger with the description this year, I think.
So this December,
yes.
The Cathedral in Kilkenny and Yule Fest have teamed up to bring Starlight by Lux Morales.
Okay, lovely.
Now, if you think about the cathedral, it's vast.
Uh-huh.
Every interior surface is going to be covered by the most spectacular immersive light show. And light show doesn't quite capture it because it's not just lights. There's a soundscape attached to it, but it's also fine art projections. And the whole idea of it is it's taking that idea of starlight, the star that's in the nativity story, and trying to enter into some of those festive Christmas thoughts and journeys with amazing art projections on every wall, lights, stars.
Gorgeous.
I mean, to be honest, I think it's just going to be totally, totally immersive. You sort of, you go into, you come in, and I think just everywhere you look, there's going to be something else to see, constantly moving, constantly shifting. You think how tall the cathedral is, how long it is.
Like, how big just, is the cathedral? I think, would you know in square meters how big the cathedral is?
I haven't a notion. I know it is the second longest cathedral in Ireland.
Wow, okay.
After St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin.
Okay, and I know that cathedral and well. It's very
big. It's
big. Yeah.
And I know that sort of in the crossing at the centre where we had the moon last year, we've got about 13 metres in height.
Wow.
So we're talking a large area.
Like, I've only seen photos and they are astounding even.
Oh, I mean, the sort of, you know, seeing stars covering everything, seeing pictures moving. I mean, the way that the artist describes it, Peter Walker, is he said it's a little bit like stained glass for the modern era.
Okay.
Through, you know, the technical sort of much more scientifically advanced world that we have today, where they can just do things that are moving, that are in so many ways engrossing. But taking that same idea of using light and images that kind of informed the whole idea of stained glass back in the day, only doing it on such a totally different scale.
Fabulous. It sounds a little bit like, remember that Vincent van Gogh immersive exhibition that was in Dublin a while ago? That's what it sounds like. Just really?
That on steroids. I mean, because it's just everywhere.
Love this.
Yeah, no. Look, I haven't actually been to anywhere that this has been on. It has been all over the world. The artist prides himself on really finding venues that are iconic because he wants to be able to show sort of really spectacular architecture as well in a new light. So when people come in, there's sort of timed and ticketed entry, so it's never too busy.
Okay.
There'll be some pews in the building still, so if people want to come down and sit and just sort of watch it happening around them, they can. There'll be enough space if people want to come in and walk around and sort of, you know, go with the pictures as it's all happening. They can do that as well. And each show is about 25 minutes, but you're not kind of ushered out at the end of it. Once you come in, if you want to see it twice, you know, you're more than welcome to stay and to do that. And the whole idea is it's the, you know, like all these things that work really well, that are sort of good art, will work on a number of levels. So if you've got kids who just want to come in and see the prettiness going around them, they'll get something out of it. If you want people who want to sort of, you know, engage with the imagery or think about the stories and what it's evoking, you know, there's a whole other way to do it as well.
And then how long is a session?
About 25 minutes.
Oh, lovely.
Is the show.
And so I love the idea that you said at the start about the, it's got this element of Christmas about it.
Yeah, I think it has taken that kind of Star of Bethlehem idea, that starlight, but also thinking about ideas that come up at this time of the year. You know, there's a lot of darkness, but, you know, we all hold to the idea that light triumphs over darkness and, you know, brighter days will come and all that sort of thing. And I suppose for us in the cathedral, it works really well with the idea of Jesus coming at Christmas, that light into the world that conquers darkness. But I think whoever you are, whatever your background, beliefs, whatever else, there's something to take out of this. So we're really, really pleased to be partnering with Kilkenny's Yule Fest to do this year.
And this very much now your calling card, doing something unusual in the cathedral, isn't it? And something that's very much based on installations and light, and like the moon that we talked about last year was just a feat, really.
I know it was great fun. And I think when we spoke in March, I said one of the things is it's hard to get ourselves today, 21st century eyes, back into the mindset of medieval people.
Yes.
Like when this cathedral was built, you could have fitted everybody in Kilkenny in it at least once. And it's hard for us to walk in and see it the way they saw it. They'd have been amazed that there was even such a large space enclosed indoors. Mm-hmm. So to get that same sense of wonder that places like this are meant to cause in us, that sort of gasp of the breath and, oh my goodness, you know, we're having to push the boat out a little bit these days. You know, people have got different experiences.
Of course.
I'm always really happy when we can show the cathedral to its fullest. I'm always really happy when we can throw open the doors and get in as many people and, you know, people who might not think of crossing the threshold otherwise. It is sacred space, but it's also community space. And it's somewhere where, you know, everybody can, I think, feel some sense of belonging, mm-hmm. find some sense of peace, mm-hmm. and really, I think, just start to get in the spirit of Christmas. If this doesn't do it, I mean, this is following on just from our Christmas tree festival, which will happen from the 4th to the 8th. So then we get a breather for a few days, and then Lux Morales comes in on the 14th.
It's like rock and roll has arrived.
Exactly. I'll sleep in January because this comes out just after our Civic Carol service and then we're into Christmas week. So,
You're a busy man. Well, it's 14.
Plenty of strong coffee on the way here.
There you go. And then you'll deserve your Christmas dinner on the 25th. But this is the 14th to the 21st of December. It's part of Yule Fest Kilkenny. So if you want to check it out on their website, it's yulefestkilkenny.ie. If you're from Kilkenny, you cannot not know about St. Canice's Church. But Reverend Stephen Farrell is the Dean of St. Canice's Church. And I'm a little bit blown away by the picture, so I'm really looking forward to seeing this as well. And very interested to seeing what your next event is going to be as well, Stephen.
Yeah, so am
no
I.
No pressure.
Actually, well, you know, keep my number. There's something else in the pipeline, but let's do this first.
No better man. Well, it is called, will you pronounce it again there, Stephen? Because, of course, I'll have difficulty with it. Or is it? No, I'll try it. Lux Morales, and it's called.
Lux Morales, perfect.
And
perfect,
it is perfect. Their Irish debut of Starlight, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's an immersive experience of light, sound and fine art projection at St. Canice's Church from the 14th to the 21st of December. That's in Kilkenny City, of course, yulefestkilkenny.ie. Stephen, it's always lovely to talk to you. Best of luck with all with that. And you're the first person that I'll say Happy Christmas to.
And Happy Christmas to you.
Happy Christmas.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It's the weekend. You're listening to Beat. It is the Sunday Grill and it's movie time. And our usual reviewer, Brian Griffin, has absconded to somewhere in Asia. If you follow him on Instagram, you'll know where he is right now. He mightn't even be there anymore. He's living the life. So we've asked Odrin from Beat News and Sport to come in and talk to us about a movie that Brian has swerved. It's called Wicked for Good. You should know it by now. And I don't think good is a word that Odrin would use to describe the second in the Wicked series.
Yeah, probably I wouldn't say for good, but also I wouldn't say for bad either.
Okay, will we listen to a clip?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Elva Withrop, I know you're out here. Just come in before the monkeys spot you.
There's no going back. This is between us, the wizard and I.
The Wicked Witch can't elude us forever. Not with Prince Fiero and his squadron hot on her trail.
No good deed goes unpunished. That's my creed.
The wonderful Wizard of Oz. No one believed in you more than I did.
Elphaba. They're coming for you.
There you go. Wicked for Good. I'm very much looking forward to going and seeing this. But here is the great reviewer that is Odrin Johnson, and he has some other things to say about it. Now, can we just start at the very beginning, because you had not seen the first Wicked?
No, I hadn't seen it up until this week. Now, granted, I had seen the actual musical itself years ago.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'd seen it when I was very young, so it's kind of hazy in my mind. But I remember enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always difficult to know how well a musical will translate to the screen, as is the case with any adaptation. But
yes.
I sat down and I watched the first movie, which is a
blistering
2 hours and 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I sat down, watched that, and expected to be kind of bored and kind of to be looking at my phone or whatever. Completely entranced. Loved every moment of it.
It's fab. It's really fab. Oh, I feel a butt there about this one then, the second one.
I was a bit, because I was kind of feeling to myself afterwards, the first movie ends on a really good note and it feels like it is 2 hours and 40 minutes, but it fills that time really well.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of feel like, you know what, I'm actually even just content with the end of this movie, but if there is something else after it, yes, I'll go and see it. Now, I went into this movie obviously seeing that it was, I think it's 2 hours and 17 minutes is the runtime of this, and thinking that doesn't seem out of the ordinary. Actually, it seems quite short by comparison to the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it picks up completely where the first movie ended off, which is where Elphaba, who's played by Cynthia Erivo, was kind of ostracized by Oz society. Yes. And she's now leading this somewhat poor revolution of sorts. And, you know, I was interested to see where this would go. Obviously, knowing the original story of The Wizard of Oz as well, I knew that there was going to be some play into that as well near the end of it. But when I went to see it, I couldn't help but feel that there was a lot of stuff in here that felt like the movie was spliced together. Mm-hmm. And if, like, for the sake of, obviously, I know the background of this, that they filmed both of these parts back to back.
In January 2024 is when they stopped, when this was finished for it. It's just mad the way it comes out. But yeah, sorry, go on.
But the crazy thing about it is if I didn't know that information, I would have felt like this movie was definitely like a reaction to the success of the first one and that they had filmed it for that reason. Because there's a lot of almost, I want to say, Marvel-esque sort of fan service-y stuff, you know, where you see a character come on screen and you're almost expecting like the theatre to cheer or whatever, which is an element of cinema that I'm still yet to kind of grasp and figure out whether I like it in some situations or not.
Give me some examples of that now, because I know in Marvel it's all these little Easter eggs for the deep fans of the Marvel movies. But in this case, like, you know, it's based on The Wizard of Oz. It's loosely based on a book written in the 90s, which was then based on The Wizard of Oz itself. So when it comes to super fans, I suppose, we've all grown up with this story.
True, yeah, but maybe that's the double-edged sword of it, really, isn't it? Because, you know, if you know The Wizard of Oz and you grew up with the story, like I remember even when I was in school, like the school play or the school musical was The Wizard of Oz. And you kind of go into this movie and then it's no surprise to anyone that obviously like Dorothy features in it and like there's obviously members of, you know, the Scarecrow, the Lion, all that. It almost feels like when they...
And are they the nods you're talking about?
It's strange because if they were in the movie on their own, I wouldn't say this is like kind of baiting fan service or whatever, because that'd be a ridiculous thing to say because obviously they're going to feature in a movie going up to this point. But the way in which they're introduced and they're kind of shown on screen, like we actually never see Dorothy's face within the movie.
Okay.
And like when she's first shown, and this isn't, I suppose, any major spoiler, but when she's first shown, it's like her after she lands on the Wicked Witch of the East and then moves on to the Elvic Road. But it does.
And she has to be referenced, obviously, because she's landed on.
Yeah, well, there's this Elphaba. Big thing about like, oh, here comes the tornado, and it's like there's a house, and you're just kind of like feeling like, well, we know what this is, like us as the audience, so there's no reason to dramatize it as much as it is.
Okay.
So to me, bits and pieces like that felt it was very much trying to egg on, being like, do you remember that? Do you remember that when you were like a child and how great that is? So this must be good in comparison to it.
And what about the songs?
Songs are good.
Yeah, as good as the last one. Like, I'm still singing Popular a year on.
No. Now, this is the thing. Obviously, musical songs are always going to be long. I never felt that in the first movie they felt too long, though, if that makes sense. Whereas when I went into this one, I was maybe 5 minutes into a song and I was like, geez, this is going on a bit now. Like, come on, I get the point of what they're trying to
and
convey.
And did you recognise any of the songs? I feel like the really iconic Wicked songs were in the first one. Did you recognise any of in the second one from...
There's callbacks to the first movie songs. There is, okay. There's elements of that in it. And, you know, I'm not going to speak as this massive, like, musicals fan because I've seen it when I was very young and that's about it. Like, I don't have any sort of great affinity to it outside of that. And I thought, you know what, it's fine, it's great. I think it's a really good family movie if you go and see it. I just think, you know, the way in which the second movie kind of rides on the coattails of something that's so great as the first movie is difficult.
Is it done now? Or does it look like we might get a third?
No, I'd say it's done. Done.
Okay, good stuff. Phew. I just find it so mad that they finished up filming 2 years ago and yet Cynthia and Ariana are still on the We Love Each Other trail and, you know, took a 12-month break and then they're back on this PR trail.
Yeah.
I'd like to get into that. That sort of a business, it would be great. Do you want a black pudding it?
Yeah, go on. I will, and I feel mean doing this, but I'd give it a 5 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I think people can go into this and they'll really enjoy it, and I'm really happy that they do. I just think that in comparison to the first movie, there was a lot of really interesting themes about, like, you know, coming to realise the lie of the Wizard of Oz and kind of his sort of, you know, the whole aspect of him imprisoning animals and this sort of taking away of the magical element of Oz. And that was kind of nuanced in the sense, and the whole thing of Wicked has been showing that there's nuance to good and evil. Whereas the second movie kind of rips out any of the sort of added layer of nuance, and it's kind of very surface level nuance, if that makes sense.
So it's trying
kind of like
to hit you in the face with stuff all the time. Is that what you're
not
saying?
Not even hit you in the face with stuff, but it's kind of like, oh yeah, the Wicked Witch isn't that bad. But and then it's like, But all the talking points around the nuance of it are very much like catered towards obviously children, which is fair enough. But the first movie had elements where I felt like, yes, it's obviously a much more simplistic way of looking at good and evil in terms of nuance, but you could actually get something out of it as an adult and feel like, oh yeah, I really think that's interesting how they've done this or whatever. Mm. Whereas the second movie feels like it's just moving from point to point, and it feels almost spliced together, the movie, that they're hitting key points. But yeah, 5 out of 10 is what I'd say. And I don't feel good saying that, but yeah, I think you could definitely get something out of it. And just because I said 5 out of 10 doesn't mean it's terrible.
It is your review this morning. Yeah. So we will accept your 5 black puddings out of 10 for Wicked for Good. I'm still going to see it. All 2 hours, 17 minutes of it. And I'm looking forward to those nods to The Wizard of Oz and all that. I enjoy that, you know, the multi-layeredness of it. Thank you very much, Odrin. Odrin will be back next week with another movie for us. You get to choose what that is. Okay?
Oh, God. Okay.
No pressure. In the meantime, 5 black puddings out of 10 for Wicked for Good. Thanks a million, Odrin.
Thanks, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.